You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones. Later in the program, you will hear a breakdown of the important races to watch in Indiana. This includes the race for Attorney General and for the U.S. House of Representatives, District 5.
Also coming up in the next half hour, you will hear from a poll worker, an election protection worker, and from voters themselves on Election Day. But first, your local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news brief for Tuesday, November 3rd. I'm Jake Jacobson. 2,951 new cases of COVID-19 were reported in Indiana on Monday, according to the Indiana State Department of Health. There were 50 newly reported deaths. As of this morning, only three counties in Indiana are considered blue counties, according to the ISDH website's County Metrics, which indicates low community spread. The majority of Indiana's 92 counties are considered orange, which indicates medium to high community spread. Locally, Monroe County saw 35 new confirmed cases yesterday, while Lawrence County reported 16. Brown County reported 4 new cases. It's Election Day. Polling locations are open today until 6 p.m. As long as you are in line to vote before 6 p.m., you will legally be allowed to vote, so do not leave your polling station. If you make a mistake on your ballot, you may ask for a new one. If you are not sure where your polling location is, you can look it up at indianavoters.in.gov. You'll be able to look up your location by voter registration, which asks for your name and birthday, which will help you avoid situations where you may end up at the incorrect polling station. If you are struggling to find a way to your polling place, the Monroe County Democratic Party is offering free transportation to any Monroe County voter. Just call 812-336-3696 before 6 p.m. today. Please wear a mask, which will be required at your voting station as well. If you do not have a mask, your driver will provide one. County residents with disabilities that require a lift or ramp should call Area 10 Rural Transit at 812-876-2610 to reserve a ride. City residents with the same issues should call Beloved Transportation at 812-287-2610. 2610. That's all for your local news brief. From WFHB, I'm Jake Jacobson.
The Bloomington Redevelopment Commission discussed a design contract for First Street reconstruction. Interim Transportation and Traffic Engineer Neil Copper spoke during the November 2nd meeting.
This is in coordination with the hospital redevelopment. The primary focus of the project is reconstructing first between Fairview and College, but during our initial assessment, we know that that reconstruction may stretch further west, potentially as far as Walker Street. Beyond the roadway itself needing work, including replacing a traffic signal, addressing old pavement, addressing a lack of sidewalks in some areas, a big piece of this project is actually what's underground with utility repairs and upgrades that are necessary to serve the future development of the hospital site itself. So we know that some of the stormwater, sanitary sewer water, some of those things aren't adequate today to serve what we, with the hospital plan you're looking at in the future.
Copper mentioned $2.9 million was federally funded for the project. He said renovations would complement any final hospital site design.
You know, there's no current proposals to make dramatic changes to like the location of First Street or anything like that. The biggest changes we're expecting is planning for future intersections for the north-south streets. You know, there are options to look at adding more of a street grid in the area. So we'll be coordinating closely for, you know, where those intersections would be and making sure we'll work for that. But yes, we do think it will account for any of the options on the table.
Commission member Eric Sandwise questioned street construction before hospital site development. Copper explained the provided federal funding must be used within the proposed timeline.
We have been coordinating, with the hospital redevelopment effort, and we do think that we'll have the information we need before we reach, cross any point where we've, gone down a design road and then something different would happen. We don't think we're in any concerns about that. The first efforts from our designers are going to be going out and getting a topographic survey and starting the environmental process and things that don't nail us down into a box before we want to be.
Commissioner David Walter said the plan included a First Street connection to Patterson Drive that could improve traffic. Commissioners unanimously approved the resolution.
The Bloomington City Council Transportation Committee discussed an ordinance to amend municipal code during their October 28th meeting. Long-range planner Amir Farshi described the changes.
It adds some stop intersections, a new pedestrian hybrid beacon signal, and a new no parking zone. The ordinance deletes several loading zones that are no longer in existence, and the residential neighborhood zone 8, as that zone was absorbed by other zones by a previous ordinance. The ordinance corrects the time restrictions for one loading zone, and the ordinance clarifies that the parking services division has the authority to begin the neighborhood parking permit sales process for the upcoming year at any time.
Councilmember Kate Rosenbarger questioned the location of B-Link lights. Planning Services Manager Beth Rosenbarger said they are at the entrance of Switchyard Park.
Pedestrian hybrid beacon is a flashing red light. It's different. Also, Neil is welcome to chime in. The yellow one is an RRFB, rectangular rapid flashing beacon, which is telling people to yield. But the other one that we're doing, the pedestrian hybrid beacon, requires that people stop. So first, when a person presses it, there's a certain amount of time, and then it switches to an all stop. It flashes a solid red, and then it switches to flashing red. And when it's flashing, people driving must come to a complete stop, look and see if anyone is coming, and then they can proceed. And then eventually it shuts off and traffic goes like normal.
Transportation and traffic engineer Neil Copper said a stop bar was installed with the beacon. Councilmember Stephen Volan proposed an amendment to the ordinance.
So neighborhood zone 6 is Garden Hill. This is the zone between the stadium and 17th Street and the railroad tracks, rather. The stadium and the railroad tracks. And 17th Street is the northernmost border of Garden Hill. And there are a number of single-family residences on 17th that have a 17th Street address, but thanks to the way that the zone was drawn, are excluded from the zone. It looks like the zone was gerrymandered because I guess at the time the neighborhood, or I'm not sure who, didn't think that those houses didn't belong. But I mean, they're clearly south of 17th Street, okay? And they're houses that should qualify under the current rules of neighborhood parking zones.
Volan stated any qualified address and street boundaries could get a parking pass.
Now it's time for your feature reports. WFHB's Cade Young and Sydney Foreman offer some Election Day coverage. You will hear a breakdown of the races to watch in Indiana and from voters themselves. We now turn to Cade Young and Sydney Foreman for more.
As of Monday morning, over 1.7 million people casted their ballots by mail or in person at an early voting site, according to the Indiana Secretary of State's office. The Associated Press explains that this election may be delayed due to the record number of early votes. However, the AP's Nicholas Riccardi writes, quote, "And if so, it does not necessarily mean anything is broken, fraudulent, corrupted, or wrong," end quote. As of Monday, 22,881 early votes were casted in Monroe County. Only one early voting site was open, at Monroe County Election Central. Election Central could not give a specific time frame when it will publicly release how many total ballots were casted, but a delay is expected due to high numbers of early and absentee ballots. Right now, President Donald Trump leads the presidential race in Indiana. According to the statistical journalism website 538, the forecasted vote share shows Trump at around 53% of the vote and Biden at 42%. Republican Governor Eric Holcomb also holds a strong lead in the state's governor's race. However, other races to watch in Indiana include the race for state attorney general and the race for the U.S. House of Representatives, District 5.
Todd Rokita, a former U.S. congressman, looks to keep the state attorney general seat within Republican control. Rokita's nomination came after Attorney General Curtis Hill's law license was suspended over allegations that he had groped four women. Jonathan Weinzappel, Democratic candidate for Indiana's Attorney General, looks to become the first Democrat to win a statewide election since 2012.
Another race to watch in Indiana is the U.S. House of Representatives seat for District 5. Republican Victoria Spartz challenges Democrat Christina Hale for the congressional seat. Spartz won the Republican nomination over a total of 14 candidates. Tom Davies of the Associated Press reported that the primary race largely turned into a contest of loyalty to President Trump. Spartz's campaign focused on a more conservative message as compared to moderate Republican Susan Brooks, who announced in June she would not seek re-election. Democrat Christina Hale ran for lieutenant governor in 2016. The AP reported that she presented herself as bipartisan in the state legislature. Hale is running on a platform of lowering healthcare costs, improving the lives of children, protecting the environment, and strengthening the economy. The AP reports at least $15 million was sunk into the race, with national party organizations and dark money groups spending heavily for the district controlled by Republicans for more than five decades. Today, WFHB went to two voting sites. Compared to early voting, lines were significantly less long. However, there were crowds at certain points in the day. At Binford Elementary School, there was a line of about 80 people once polls opened at 6 a.m. For our special Election Day coverage, WFHB talked to an election protection worker, a poll worker, and several voters at a variety of polling places.
Carwina Wang, an election protection worker for Common Cause, said her role is to help voters with any questions they may have once they arrive at their polling place.
I am an election protection worker, so that if voters are coming in and have problems ranging from being at the wrong voting precinct place to not having the right ID or having a question with the mail-in ballot, then I am here to help.
At about 9:30 a.m., there was no line at Binford Elementary School, one of the 28 voting sites in Monroe County. Wang said it was busy when the polls opened at 6 a.m. She expected crowds again at noon and before 6 p.m.
It was very early, busy early on. The inspector here at the polling place said that there were 81 people in line, so it was stretched into the park, the basketball court.
Wow.
But they've been doing a great job here at the precinct. It's been moving very quickly. The line was gone very early, and now we're waiting for the noon rush.
During the interview, she reported no irregularities, only that there were more people than usual ready to vote at 6 a.m. Wang closed by telling voters what they need to know before voting in person on Election Day.
The main thing is that they should be bringing their photo ID, state-issued, either like Indiana or the U.S. government, and it has to have an expiration date on it. It can still be expired as long as it expired after last year's election.
Megan Proyen, a Bloomington resident from Crown Point, Indiana, described how she felt after casting her ballot at Binford Elementary.
I mean, I feel pretty good. I just hope that everybody else votes if they have the opportunity, because a lot of people can't. So I hope especially that the younger generation takes advantage of turning 18 and everything. And yeah, I mean, I feel good.
She said she voted in person on Election Day because she didn't want to wait in long lines to vote. Proyen said that voting is important, especially for young people whose lives are affected by policy.
I mean, it's so important because these people that run this country and make the rules we have to live by, especially like younger people, like we're going to live in this country for a much longer time. So, I mean, we need to take advantage of that. And because literally whoever's in office can say and do whatever they want, and that just dictates how we live our lives. So I think it's very, very important.
Selena Jennings voted this afternoon at the Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship on South Patterson Drive. Jennings, a South Bend native, said she was glad that there wasn't a line.
I feel good. The fact that there was no line made me feel a lot better. I wasn't really ready to stand in like a 3-hour line. I would, because it's that important, but I wasn't really ready. Overall, I feel great.
Jennings said she wanted to vote early, but never found the time. She explained why she feels voting is so important.
I feel like it's important because, like, as citizens here, we need to exercise our voice. And in order to get this country to where we want it to be as individuals, we have to exercise our right to vote.
Tom Henderson has been a poll worker since 1972, when George McGovern faced off against then-President Richard Nixon. He has worked the polls for many elections since. Today, he was a poll worker at the Binford Elementary School voting site. This morning, he said he saw long lines at 6 a.m., as compared to previous elections.
Well, for the same time today, and we're talking in a morning conversation, we've had about double the people that we normally see during a general election. So we had the longest line that I've ever seen here, even discounting the social distancing that was occurring. So it was heartening to watch everyone. Everyone had their patient's pants on. It was just delightful. So, and we have enough staff here to get people through the process in a really fast way too. And I thank the election board for that. We're very well staffed and they're very well trained. It was a few minutes after six when the line was definitely the longest. People were prepared for it, though. They had a cup of coffee in hand and maybe several different layers, a hat, and yes, they had the patience going. So the crowds have been really helpful, and the exception handling is actually surprisingly small. We generally have more voter changes and address changes, and this time everybody seemed to know what the drill was, which is very, very helpful.
He talked about sanitation efforts and personal protective equipment for staff and voters at Binford Elementary.
We have a prescribed method for cleaning everything from pens to surfaces to, yes, that's right, even the faucets in the restrooms. And it's done on a schedule so that we can maintain both social distancing but also clean surfaces. We're using an iPad as the poll clerk book, and people can sign with their fingers, and we wash them after every usage. And so we're trying to do our best to, you know, protect both the workers, but also, importantly, the voters as well.
Overall, Henderson said the voting process has been smooth, as compared to previous elections he spent as a poll worker.
It's surprisingly more simple than other elections I've been in. Again, people seem to have researched, knowing what they needed. They remember their IDs. Very few people came to the wrong precinct, so they're obviously researching this election like they haven't done before.
He said voters need to make sure they bring their IDs, which contains their full name, an expiration date, and issued by the state of Indiana or the federal government.
Best thing to do is to go to indianavoters.org and look yourself up. And that'll tell you that you're in the poll books, as you should be. If you're not, you can still be voted provisionally, or there are some cases that the inspector or other staff or the election board can help you with to get your vote in to count. It's important that you remember to bring your photo ID, and then outside of that, just be prepared to do the standard social distancing that we've all become used to, and read the instructions on the ballots, because they're all different. And if you mark them correctly, everything goes through lickety-split and you'll be out faster than you knew it.
At 2 p.m., Monroe County Clerk Nicole Brown said Bloomington High School South, Grandview Elementary School, Highland Park Elementary School, and Jackson Creek Middle School have voted more than 1,000 people. Ellettsville Christian Church and St. John's Catholic Church had voted nearly 1,500 people, and Southside Christian Church had voted more than 1,500 people. At 3 p.m., the county clerk's office said Southside Christian Church has been the polling site to beat today, with 1,629 people voting thus far. The nonpartisan advocacy group Hoosier Action informed voters to know their rights on Election Day. 1. If the polls close while you're still in line, stay in line. you do have the right to vote. Number two, if you make a mistake on your ballot, ask for a new one. And three, if you have any questions about your rights or trouble voting, call the Election Protection Hotline at 1-866-OUR-VOTE. Again, that is 1-866-OUR-VOTE. The polls will be open today from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. at your respective voting site. For WFHB, I'm Cade Young.
I'm Sydney Foreman.
And now we turn to an excerpt of yesterday's episode of Bring It On.
Bring It On is a public affairs program exploring the people, issues, and events affecting the African-American communities in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Bring It On is a forum for the people, by the people, produced by an independent team of volunteers working at the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana,
and financially supported by listeners like you.
Good evening. I'm Cornelius Wright, and welcome to Bring It On, a multiple award-winning radio broadcast in our 16th year as Indiana's only weekly community show committed to exploring the people, issues, and events impacting the African-American community. We are less than 24 hours away from what has been described as the most consequential election of our time. On the eve of the elections all across the country, we want to take an opportunity to focus on our local school board and state elections. During the first half hour of the show, we'll focus on one of the four Monroe County Community School Corporation, the MCCSC, board and trustee elections, and during the second half, we'll focus on the Indiana state elections. Joining us tonight to discuss the school board election and talk a little bit about MCCSC is Sue Wanzer, current school board member of District 2 and candidate for re-election. Sue has held that position since 2001, and she also serves as vice president of the Monroe County Community School Corporation Board of Trustees. Sue, welcome to Bring It On.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to do this with you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Well, let's get right down to it. We've had the pleasure of having you as our school board member since 2001. And let us know a little bit about your time on the board and why you want to keep staying on the board and up for re-election again.
Oh, thank you so much for asking that question. Before I ever ran for the board, I was a volunteer at Fairview Elementary School. And that taught me a whole lot about what we don't have in some of our schools. It showed me the disparity of our schools and the just the great needs and what our teachers are doing. So from that, I decided if I can help one school, maybe I can help all the schools. So that's when I decided to run for the school board. And basically, my time on the board has been spent emphasizing the need to serve the least of us. I believe public education is the great equalizer in a democracy. And I also believe that through public education, I guess all things are possible. So I have sought for the last two decades to increase diversity, to increase understanding of differences, to make sure that every student is safe and has an equal opportunity in our schools. And sometimes, you know, Cornelius, that's meant a fight of a few years. Sometimes it's been a difficult struggle. Sometimes there hasn't been the support for that. But it's kept me going, and I believe I've been able to make a number of different policy changes that really helps all of our kids and all of our families, and in the end, that benefits our schools.
Indeed. Speaking of diversity, I know that the commitment to diversity and equity and inclusion, it's necessary to build one's individual awareness about community members not like themselves.
Yes.
You've been on the board for quite a while. What are some of the ways that the school board as a collective is educating themselves about issues that impact the minority communities? And is there some sense of accountability with the board?
Well, that's a great question, especially about the accountability. I guess the accountability, we really haven't built that in. And that's why I really appreciate that question. That's something we need. And I guess that's something that we ask our community to help us figure out. But over the years, especially with our school board, we have done some training just for the board with some outside consultants on implicit bias, on anti-racist training, on LGBTQ awareness. And I think it's been very instructive to the board, even those of us who think, well, I know everything there is to know about diversity, or I've been through these things before. You know, it doesn't matter how many times you've been through it. You learn something new. You learn ideas from other people. And I think what it does is it helps strengthen us as a board so that we are more understanding when we hear from teachers or administrators or principals, or when we hear from students about the different things that are happening in school. Because the one thing about public education, the beauty of it is it's public. Sometimes the difficulty is it's public. And so we have all kinds of families and all kinds of children with all kinds of needs, and they're all competing needs. So just like our general society, Cornelius, with everyone at odds with each other, that happens in our schools too. So we have to be aware of all aspects of our kids.
You know, that leads me to another point, and we're going to kind of tie the two ends together. One of the huge issues nationally is the COVID epidemic.
Yeah.
How society is handling it, schools are handling it. MCCSC made a decision, I believe it was in August, to go back to school. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about the decision that went into that, to go back to school? Are there any plans as the COVID epidemic is rising across the country now? Are there any contingency plans if it gets worse here in Monroe County?
This has been very stressful for everyone, especially our folks who are in schools, our teachers, our custodians, our support staff, our administrators. Our superintendent called together physicians, an epidemiologist, mental health workers, public health workers to help review information and to help make recommendations. So the one thing I always say is I might not know a lot, but I do know what I don't know. And I don't know about public health. I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not a physician. So I listened to what these people said and understood that if we took the right precautions to make our schools as safe as possible, that we would be in a good position to open schools. And my biggest concern throughout all of this has been the children who need to be in school because they're getting services, they're getting food, they're getting support that they won't get at home if they're not in school. I don't want those kids falling through the cracks. We just had a wonderful presentation by Byron Turner at our school board meeting on Tuesday, who works for Child Protective Services, talking about the number of the lack of reports, actually, the number of abuse, child abuse reports, how it went down this summer and in the spring. And it's not because there was less abuse of children. It was because there weren't the people like teachers to report those potential incidents. So, it's something that I felt really, really important that there were certain children who needed to be in school. So that's why our superintendent and our administrators were able to work out a system where people could be in school if they chose to, or they could learn online at home. And boy, you know what? Our teachers don't get paid over the summer, but they were working over the summer to develop new skills and new tools for online learning.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Sydney Foreman in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Cade Young and Sydney Foreman.
Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Engineer and executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB, I'm Alex Dieterer.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for Planetary Radio. That's coming up next on WFHB.